Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now we are happy to be joined by the beat reporter of the New York Mets for the New York Daily News, and that is Disha Thosar, I assume from Port St. Louis. Are you there, Disha? Are you in
Not
Florida?
Yet. I'm flying down tomorrow morning. Got one more day left in the cold.
Yeah. You know what? The reason I ask is because, you know, spring training used to be a time that reporters would put into their offices for by saying, you know, it's January 2nd. I need to get down there and start, you know, doing some things to get sent. But it's just a whole different dynamic now. And whereas the Mets have been down here for a few days, how have you been able to handle covering the team from afar?
Yeah, it's definitely weird. I'm still not used to these Zoom interviews and checking in, you know, from my dining table at home. I'd much rather already be down there. But with the concerns with everything going on in Florida, with the coronavirus, them not really letting us in and until tomorrow anyway, I just figured it was better to wait. But things are weird and definitely hard adjusting to it.
You know, Disha, and hi, great to talk to you. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, as long as Howie brought it up, last year, and we talked about it last week, last year was really hard for everybody. When you were a beat person, used to being in there and used to talking one-on-one to people, how did you do that? How hard was that for you to try and get the same kind of stories that you would have on a regular basis?
Yeah, well, first of all, hi, Susan. Honored to be talking to you, too. And it was definitely weird just to be – every Zoom call had the entire beat on it. So we had a tough time securing any solo Zooms, especially with just some of the newer players that have been on the team. I think we were, as a beat, all in that same boat of getting individual interviews. So that was always tough just to be writing the same stories as everyone else. And at least for me personally, the best part of the gig is when you get to investigate and find something out on yourself. So if that's, hopefully things will be a little easier, I've heard, in that realm this year. And plus we've already had a go around of it, but I would say just, you know, 30 years listening in to every time you talk to a player was not fun.
Well, I want to talk some nuts and bolts baseball in a moment, but you've been on the beat now. This is going to be, what, your third year?
So, yeah, going into my third
year. If I'm not mistaken, right? Okay, so
yep.
So the first year was under normal circumstances. You had the opportunity as a young beat reporter to begin, and I know it's a process, to develop sources and people you can trust, and that builds better stories and the opportunity to kind of expand beyond the simple game stories. How much was compromised last year, and do you feel like you've got to make up for lost time in terms of just basically doing the job as opposed to writing the game?
Oh, 100%. Especially for me, my first year on the beat in 2019 was about my third go-around of being in and out of clubhouses after I interned for the Red Sox and then covered the Yankees and Mets a little the years before that. So I was just getting a handle on, you know, getting those sources, talking to people in the tunnels, having those conversations in the dugout before batting practice. And then, you know, for it to be wiped away after all that progress, at least for me, was tough. But, you know, I found ways to just kind of make those connections still take place, at least in spring training, before we broke apart for the pandemic. And now, hopefully, you know, it will be a little easier than the season as a whole as we're standing around in spring training, depending on, you know, what the conversation, if I have to shout 10 feet so that someone can hear me, I'm willing to do it. But, yeah, I don't think anyone's having a good time adjusting to these new rules and boundaries. We're all just hoping, you know, things return to normal.
You know, and I'm hearing that maybe by mid-season it'll be a little bit back to normal. There's nothing normal going on now at Yankee camp when I watch this and what's going on there. But I got to ask you, because if you're covering the Mets right now or you're a Mets fans, I would imagine the emotional roller coaster that you guys have been on since Steve Cohen had that unbelievable Zoom to announce that he bought the club, and everybody was so happy and everybody thought they were getting this one and that one and this one and that one, and the GM being fired and all those kinds of things. How have you been able to really put those emotional rollercoaster feelings of the fans on paper? Because you have been, and it's interesting to see. But how are you going about this?
Oh, man, yeah, it's been crazy. I think you did a really good job just summing up the craziness of this season. And at least for me, in August and September of last year, I knew the Steve Cohen drama would be happening front-loaded at the beginning of the offseason. So I was prepared for a busy November, maybe a busier December than usual. But then I thought there would definitely be some sort of break. And it was just totally not what happened. I mean, every single day was something. And offseason, at least for me, is supposed to be a break. And there were no breaks. It was, you know, I had to call into my editors to be like, I need at least one day off this week. And even on those days, it ended up being something would happen. I was actually on vacation when the Lindor trade happened. So thankfully, I was still able to stay on vacation. But I even had a hard time, you know, just nailing down dates to take some days off. So getting the part about at least getting it on paper, it just turned for me during the season, at least, have to be so locked in. Even 2 days off away from the game can take you out of some of the news that happens, as you guys, I'm sure, are well aware. So I kind of just went back into that mode in this off season too. And it would seriously be, you know, 48 hours away would be like, okay, what do I have to check in on now? What did I miss? So I tried to just be as locked in as possible, get as many details, talk to as many people as I could while working from home. And I think, you know, at the end it was busy, but it worked out, at least on staying locked in.
All right. Well, Deesha, let's talk some baseball now. Are the Mets done? Do you think that the collection of players in Port St. Lucie is from whom they will choose a roster? Or do you still get the sense that whether it's a reliever or an outfielder, that there might be yet another move to be made?
Right. Well, are they ever done this offseason? I think it's just been nonstop action. But this does look, at least after Taijuan Walker, the most complete roster that they've had since we've heard about all the moves that they wanted to make from Sandy initially. This looks like the picture that he sort of envisioned, maybe missing a couple big free agents. But in terms of just getting ready for opening day, I think now what they're dealing with is recovering from the loss of Seth Lugo, which came obviously at a huge surprise to everyone. They didn't even know about it until camp basically opened. So they do have a hole in the bullpen, at least to open the season. If they're going to upgrade anywhere, I think that's where their focus is. But the good news is he's due back in May, so they don't have to worry about it too much. But I think it is a huge blow to that bullpen when he's missing those first couple months.
Well, you know what, Deesha, and let me keep going with the bullpen, because I'm looking at non-roster bullpen guys, and because we had Jerry Blevins on. Besides Jerry Blevins, there are people in this non-roster list like Jared Eichhoff and Trevor Hilgenberger, who Yankees couldn't get a hit off of when he was in Minnesota. Tommy Hunter, Mike Montgomery, and Vizcaino, who used to be a Yankee and was a closer. There, it seems to me is that they're stockpiling people just in case. Something happens. And they're names. They're not people that we haven't heard of. It's just, it's amazing to me how many people I know on this non-roster roster.
Exactly. And I think, you know, that comes with a combination of just learning what the Mets went through last year, especially in the rotation. It was just a revolving door for that fifth spot. And a lot of that had to do with, obviously, the pandemic, Noah having surgery, Stroman opting out. So they kind of had to battle, you know, that front. But this is a completely different front office that turned everything around. And all credit to Sandy Alderson for providing that depth. And like you said, there are names there. In the event of something like Lugo happening, which has already happened to start the year, I think they're covered for now. But it's still, you know, they can feel the loss of just how big a role he played in that bullpen.
You know, I thought it was somewhat cryptic when it was mentioned by the acting GM, Zach Scott, recently that when asked about J.D. Davis as far as being the regular third baseman, essentially, and I'm paraphrasing what Zach said, he said that we envision J.D. as being an important part of the team, but he kind of skated on whether or not that meant as the everyday third baseman. Now, there were reports that the Mets were engaged with the Cubs on Chris Bryant, which didn't appear to have gone very far. But do you feel there's still some uncertainty about how third base is going to shake out relative to J.D. Davis? Or might it have just meant that, you know, there'll be a mixing of match and matching where maybe McNeil gets some time at third and you know, Guillorme at second or vice versa with Jonathan Villar, of course, now in the mix? How do you think that's going to shake out?
Yeah, I think especially when I heard Zach Scott say the same thing about a few weeks ago now, I thought there was still potential for something to happen there, for them to make a move at third. But now when I heard Luis Ross talking about, you know, versatility, and he, knowing, covering him and now for his first season as a manager, he really likes moving guys around and shifting positions. And he spends, you know, this time in spring training making sure that they're aware and prepared that that can be a possibility. When it comes to J.D. Davis, I think last year is exactly why those concerns arise. There's some concerns with his arm at third base, and just his, I've noticed in his first step and those first jumps are a little nervous and shaky for him, but he has such a good arm. He has a really powerful arm. And then combined with his down year at the plate, I think fans were kind of this offseason like, oh man, we're still going with JD. But he had a great breakout season in 2019, and obviously last year was weird for everyone for multiple reasons. So I think if he's given the chance to play every day and gain some of that confidence back that he is an everyday starter, and he starts meshing with the rest of the lineup, the rest of the roster, then I think we can actually expect, you know, something similar from JD in 2019. And people forget that he is an extremely hard worker and very smart and thoughtful. So he's not just, you know, rolling on his side when it comes to should I be the starting third baseman for the Mets. I think he's taking... Yeah, exactly. He's taking a huge
big part of that clubhouse, too, which is not to be taken too lightly. He's a big part of the chemistry within that group.
Exactly, yeah. Him and Dom, especially Pete, that's kind of McNeil. That's the young core that fans have really started to get used to and familiarize themselves with in the last couple of years. And he's a fan favorite. And I think when he's at his best, he's so fun to watch, and he's so fun in the dugout. And he's just, you know, it provides that culture and that energy that I think the Mets are looking for going forward.
You know, one of the things also, and I got to ask you, because I see also signing Kevin Pillar, Malik Smith is there. You've got an awful lot of outfielders that have that have energy, that can play all three positions. Who is the starting outfield if the season opens tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, the DH, not having the DH in the NL, I think, is really troubling the Mets, and they were really pushing for it in the offseason. So without it, we're going Nimmo in left, obviously Nimmo in center, Conforto in right, and Smith in left. And I think they would have preferred to have Dom, you know, DHing most days, or maybe giving Pete a day off and taking first some days. But now it looks like to have his bat in the lineup, which was so solid for them last year, they have to put him in left. And that is concerning because he's, I mean, average at best, and so is Nimmo. We saw a lot of balls just fly over Nimmo's head against the wall in center field, and they looked, even just to the eye, they looked like catches that he should have had. And then when you look at some of the advanced metrics, he had actually some of the worst metrics among the outfielders. So I think in left and center, it is a little bit concerning. But again, these guys have had an idea that these could be possibilities. So I think Mets fans should hope that they've improved, and they can only do, you know, so much and hope that the bat overpowers their defensive concerns.
You know, there's another interesting and very understated, and in the bigger picture, maybe not that big a deal, but I think this is worth looking at too, is that, okay, James McCann was signed to a nice free agent contract, and he's the guy who's going to be expected to play the majority of the games, to be sure, behind the plate, but that's something he doesn't have a whole lot of experience doing at the big league level, as well as he played for the White Sox last year and the year before. So is it pretty well set in stone that Tomas Nito is going to back him up, or is there a chance somebody else might find some more work behind the plate to back up McCann?
Yeah, I think at this point it would be Tomas Nito's job to lose. He's pretty much like a definite to slot in behind McCann, and only because even their backups behind Nito are guys like Pat Mazzica. So I think they're really holding out hope that not only can McCann have a really good, this is, like you said, going to be his first try at really having a full year as a starting catcher. He's already made a lot of moves of just understanding his pitching staff. But I think for me personally, I think as a new catcher to the team, it's going to take him a while to get used to everyone. We saw kind of the same thing with Ramos. It was a different case, but Ramos even was a veteran catcher who at times struggled to just understand the pitching staff. So I think it was smart of James McCann to get a head start on it in the offseason and start studying up these guys. But it sounds like they're, you know, the pitchers have really loved what they've seen so far from both of them.
And we've last year, Howie and I were doing these shows during, well, all year. And on Father's Day, we had Alou on, and he was talking about his son, obviously, the manager of the Mets, Luis Rojas, and said he was very worried about not having a full year, and he was worried what was going to happen. How do you think that Luis handled last year, and what do you expect from him this year?
Yeah, I think last year was so tough for a rookie manager, and he just handled it with so much poise throughout. And even, I mean, the bosses that he had and just that pressure that he was under, I think you could tell sometimes in his press conferences with us, just talking to him daily, that he wasn't totally comfortable talking about things. He wasn't sure exactly what he could reveal. I think he did a decent job managing the games. Even that, I think, will improve with confidence in the years there. But I think as far as all of the curveballs that were thrown his way in the pandemic, the injuries, the Black Lives Matter movement that touched the Mets really at heart, he handled all of that in stride. And I think that's so hard to do. And I think he was able to do it because he knows his players. He's been with these players since the minors. They love him. He loves them. And I think he feels already, I mean, in the first maybe handful of conversations we've had with him this year, he seems way more comfortable to me. His answers are almost too long. We'd like to, you know, because sometimes like shorten those press conferences. But I think he's going to hopefully break out of those first year nerves and that shell that he might have had last year and just enjoy what he can expect, which is a full season this year.
Well, Deesha, thanks so much for taking some time away from your packing to get down here to Florida.
Exactly. I know you're called it.
Excited about picking up quite a few degrees on the old thermometer. So we look forward to seeing you down here. Thanks for joining us, and good luck. We'll see you soon.
Thanks so much, Deesha.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you, Susan. Thanks, Howie. Talk soon.
Safe travels.
All right. That is Deesha Thosar, who covers the Mets for the New York Daily News.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.